You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when the blue snowflakes start falling, your Christmas of white, but I have a blue, 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 blue Christmas.
Because we're having.
There you go. Failure to follow simple instructions.
I know. I saw 208, and I assumed the rest of it. I thought you making sure that I called you on the 208 number, and I did not follow the rest of the instructions. Joining me is Montana Man. I just played the interview from the guy in North Dakota, and it's. I mean, I listened to that. You have. If I had Agent Orange in me, I'd be pissed. And.
Yeah.
You know what? And he just said, hey, look, they were trying to do a good thing, and they didn't know. And you know, the North Koreans were infiltrating, and they were, you know, they were trying to get rid of the vegetation to save our lives. And you know, I've lived a good life. And you're like, you listen to it going, man, oh, man, you know. I mean, are the rest of us even worthy of that? And then on top of that today, I read the news that, over the weekend, Kyle Carpenter, graduated in Medal of Honor recipient in 2-9 or 2-8. Do you remember, Rob?
I thought it was 2-8.
Yeah, I thought it was 2-8 too. And I was telling a story about all the different things we did to cheat on medevacs to get those guys in the air. Did he come to Dwyer? Did you go over and see him? Do you remember that? Or did he go north?
I think he went north.
Yeah, he was at the northern end of the AO. But I was every time I see that kid, that young man, I'm just reminded of the work not only our air officers did, but I was telling everybody I was atypical in that I had done current ops. Most people, you know, you do a job once. Like Rob's a regular officer, he does a job once, and you know, he moves on to something else. I like current operations, and after I worked for General Mattis, I went and did current operations, and I enjoyed it because it's busy and different every day. And so if you can't be leading or out there doing it and you're a reservist, it's a great job. And so when I went back to Fallujah in 2006 with Colonel Nicholson at the time, I did current operations in Fallujah, and it was awesome because it was on there. And then, and so going back, I never thought I'd go back again. And then going back in 2010 with RCT1 and Rob was the XO, I had done that job for a long time, and there was all kinds of cheats that we did. And ultimately, I mean, Kyle Carpenter might be the poster boy. for those things. And I was explaining to everybody, Rob, the way, you know, we communicate now, which is in chat rooms, and how we had our own guide that certain words got turned certain colors, and that certain people in the COC were watching company to battalion conversations. We never intervened in them, but they were just a way for us to increase our awareness, in particular looking for medevacs. And then we would turn certain words, certain colors. The word medevac was red, the word KIA, WIA, or SIBCAS, those were all red words. And so as you were looking at this screen with, like, I don't know, maybe eight boxes, and you were looking at different conversations, when you saw a red word, your eyes immediately slewed to that. And so all those little cheats on that day, you had a Lance Corporal, I believe by the name of Ipina, sitting there, and he sees, you know, it's another medevac getting run, but what gets put in the window is standby for urgent medevac. And he yells that. You know, he yells that out to everybody else, so now everybody's concentrating on it. Rudy picks up the phone, and he and our Air Officer Metro had gone over and said, hey, instead of waiting till you're tasked to go turn, will you go turn when we get the call of a possible medevac that you could be sourced for? And, you know, some guys would have told you to pound sand. Hey, you know, it's 120 out there. It's 130 in the aircraft. We're better off in here. We'll get there quick enough. Don't worry about it. But they didn't. You know, they said, yeah, no problem. And so probably within, you know, within, I would say, 10 minutes, that bird was in the air, which is amazing. Because that's not the way a lot of medevacs run. And then it was a 12-minute time of flight. And then I think from where they picked him up to Bastion was probably about another 10 minutes. So he was probably on an operating table within 30 minutes of the event, which is quick, which is really quick. And the corpsman, when you see different interviews done, the corpsman says, you know, if it wasn't, that medevac got there in no time. If it wasn't for the speed of that medevac, he would not have made it. And so I'm very proud of that. Whenever I see him, I think of all that work and by all those guys, from Lance Corporals to majors, that you know, made that kind of stuff happen, and really proud of that.
I forget what our numbers were when we got there, because, you know, we tracked all that.
Right.
You know, our flash to bang on medevacs.
Right.
And our flash to bang on calling fires too,
right?
And it was astounding how you guys, all those little cheats you guys put in place, it was astounding how much time they cut off for both those things. Anything that we were responsible to react to, it was pretty amazing to look from when we started to when we left. You know, once we sorted that system and shaved it and honed it down to as sleek as it could be, the numbers were freaking impressive. And I forget what they were. I'd have to go look, but they were pretty impressive.
We had people calling and asking us, how are you running your medevac so fast? Because, you know, those statistics get published. We had one unit. It was an Air Force unit, and their call sign was Pedro, but they initially pushed back on it and said, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And then they started seeing the dust-off numbers and how low they were. And they said, hey, we're in. As soon as we see it, we'll turn. And everybody here has heard, you know, you've heard Dave Furness, who was our regimental CO. You've heard, you know, Montana Man was the XO. Mike Musselman, I don't even know what he was over there. He was like this at large player.
Yeah, he didn't show up anywhere.
Yeah, this at large advisor. Actually, that's what he is. He's an at large advisor, and he's a weapons expert. He's a great guy. You've heard Kurt Knowles. You haven't heard guys like Rich Elaine. He's a squadron commander out at Miramar, an F-18 squadron commander now. A guy like Luke McConnell. Just, these guys are awesome. Luke McConnell is a company commander whose company was involved in the, you know, the Haditha incident. And he's a great American. and he's part of this team. And, you know, Luke was, what, 18 miles away when that incident happened and went there and did every right thing you could do and got treated like garbage by the Marine Corps and has had to hang with his Marines since that happened. And he's done nothing but cover himself with honor and respect. And do you remember the night that he was leaving? And he told a story that he had never met Colonel Furness, but his wife was teaching. I don't know. There was some news about Haditha that happened. And somebody sent a television crew up to the school where she was teaching. And Dave Furness was the regimental XO at 1st Marines. Lou Craparata, who's the CG now of 1MEF, was the commanding officer. But I guess it found its way to Furness, and Furness called the MPs and said, you need to run them out of there. Now, I don't know if we could legally do that, but they did it. And yeah. And Luke, when we farewelled him the night he left Afghanistan, he said, you know, when I heard that he was coming to the regiment, I don't know that I ever met him. He said, I wanted to be a part of this, and because of the way he treated, you know, and looked out for us when not a whole lot of people were doing that. And Luke doesn't get emotional very often. It's the only time I've seen him ever get emotional. But those are the kind of guys that we had over there. And so none of this should be very surprising because they brought, I mean, all of us would rather have been doing something else, a little bit more pointed. But they brought the same kind of attitude, hard-nosed infantry, you know, smart guy, let's kill them, let's save a lot of people, attitude every day. Pretty cool to watch the whole thing go.
What is Smoking Joe Garreau doing now?
He just took over CLB Umpty Frats, Umpty Frats.
You don't know which one?
No. At Lejeune. Our logistic guys were ballers. Yeah.
They were.
Studs.
They were servants of the subordinate unit, yeah. Which, you know, we preached that. And beat it into people that didn't think that way. But Garreau was one of the leaders of that.
Stud.
That mindset of, hey, we work for the battalions.
And living it every day. And, you know, yep. I remember having a conversation with Marines when we got to Afghanistan. And, you know, we started getting our legs underneath us. And, I don't know, I heard a conversation about number of targets and blah, 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 blah. And so I just stopped everybody. And I said, okay, everybody listen up. There's only one guy who says no in this whole regiment, and that's Dave Furness. If that's what they want, then you give it to them and skip the lecture on that's too many targets, okay? Their job is infinitely more difficult. Our job is to support them. The first words out of your suckhole when they call is, what can I do to help you? What do you need? And if you do that, and what was really cool is, and the Marines, and you know, we had good Marines. I think if you have good leaders, you know, that stuff, it's like a positive winning environment. And we had that. And the Marines responded to it. And we would have battalions when they left to go home. I think it was 2A. I think it was Dave Harold said, hey, is there any way that you guys could get us to Pendleton and we could stay with you guys? Because this is not what we're used to. And I remember him saying, when the first words consistently out of an organization are, what do you need? How can I help you? He said, come on, that's not the way the Marine Corps is. What do you want?
No, we're supposed to hate higher headquarters. That's
right.
That's ingrained in us from birth.
Right, and they would be leaving, they would come by and hang out, which is another thing that you don't do. You're like, yeah, I'm done with those assholes. Let's get out of here. And it was very rewarding to hear them come by and say those things and still friends with those guys today, and it was awesome. But Kyle Carpenter graduated from the University of South Carolina. On Saturday, I think, in their winter commencement, and got a standing ovation as he went across the stage. So the good people of South Carolina doing good stuff. So, but again, it just reminded me of. Let me read you an email, Matt. Could you talk again about the chat windows and how you guys do that? Well, it's the same radio, like Battalion TAC 1 is, you know, you still have the radio net, but you have a chat window. And you have a company CP, company COC, if you will. And there's somebody in there that's on that, and he's sending from radio traffic to squads and units on patrol and different things they're doing. He's sending reports in this chat window. The beautiful thing about that, right, is everybody who's tapped into it can see it. And so you, so then you, you, for instance, I must have monitored a dozen chat windows. And so, you know, relative to computers and monitors, you need an external monitor that's a good size to do it, or your eyes will blow out. But, you know, you just take these boxes, these chat boxes, and you stack them, in your monitor, and you're watching the AO. In fact, that's how I used to watch, what went on with 3-5. I'd watch RCT2's chat window, and when 3-5 was going through what they went through, and you're sitting there going, you got to be kidding me, not again. And but that's how we communicate now. That's how we communicate. In addition, you know, we still do VHF comm, and you have to do that. One of the guys who kind of had the least pressure on him in the regiment was our commo, because, you know,
that's not true. That's not true. I applied pressure to the commo daily.
But not the COC never did, because I had this thing. It was good when, so the way you have these dishes, right, that shoot microwaves, and that's how we communicate. This digital communication happens like that, right? Well, when the dust starts blowing and the wind's blowing, then the dishes start moving. That's not good for digital comm. So, but it, you know, when that would happen, it would offer us an opportunity to do World War II style COC maps, push pins, green gear. We could all track. We all had maps on our computers, so we could track stuff, and we'd have to manually update. But there wasn't anything we couldn't do. But you know, that was educating people that it doesn't matter to us. We're 24 weather, all capability. We're goddamn A6s, man. And so the comma.
Do you remember the TOA?
Boy.
You remember the freaking TOA? I thought Furness was going to rip the commo's face off.
Tell him.
I thought he was going to rip my face off first.
Tell the story.
We TOA, then there's the ceremony, the flag gets passed, and within 30 minutes, everything that has power to it goes down. Just dead black. And I'm like, well, shit. You know, of course, you know, yell down the hall, commo! And he comes waddling down, figuring, sir, I don't know, we're PMing the Jennies and so on and so forth. I'm like, wait, we have backups to the Jenny, right? Well, yeah, but we were going to PM. As soon as we tow it, they wouldn't let us touch those generators until we tow it. So as soon as we tow it, the commo's guys just went hog ass wild, shut down the primary generator, went to kick on the backup, and it didn't go. Now the primary wouldn't come back on. Oh, shit. Talk about World War II again. It was on.
And then what happens is you have to shut your servers down.
Yeah, and then it'd take a while to come back.
Right. If you don't shut them down deliberately and you have to emergency shut down, it's like a six-hour comeback. If you shut them down deliberately, it's only a two-hour comeback. And in that period of time, you're black. You're on green gear. You're World War II.
And then those whatever the battery backup things that beep whenever they come on. I mean, it was just like, beep, beep. I mean, everybody's shit was beeping. Freaking screens are blank. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And freaking, you should have seen the commo trying to explain to Furness what happened.
Yeah, so the commo for me, he'd be like, you know, he'd come in, like his hair, his helmet fire going, and he'd come, the door would fly open, and he'd look at me like, Mac. I'm like, hey, I don't care. We're good. And he'd like, what? I'm like, I don't care. That guy loved me because I didn't care. It doesn't matter to me how we communicate, okay? It's obviously easier. But everybody else lost their internet. You guys lost your white line, and that's what they were pissed about. I'm halfway through watching Rocky III. Goddamn it! What happened? And so the commo gets beat.
I thought he was going to get fired that day, like sent home on a plane. Like, just right, well, don't even get your shit. Just go find the nearest helicopter and get on it.
And just so you know how serious this stuff is, not filling a generator is an NJP offense.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, God forbid, and let me just tell you, again, this regiment headquarters was exceptional. It wasn't outstanding, it was exceptional. And so its ability to affect, you know, different things and make them go better, if you were to retard that and somebody pay for it with their lives, woe be to you. One, you have to live with it for the rest of your life. But two, and it would happen, though. You know, Lance Corporal so-and-so doesn't fill the generator. And then it's like, well, who's supposed to supervise Lance Corporal so-and-so? Who's supposed to walk by the gauge after he fills that? Anybody? And the backup ought to always be filled, yes? As soon as we get done using the backup, that son of a bitch ought to get filled, yes? How does the backup not have any fuel? Somebody, right? I mean, that kind of stuff. But we didn't dance that dance because we had good people. But it's funny, at the turnover, I don't know if people from Marine Corps Warfighting Labs came out at some point. At some point they did. It was towards the end of the deployment. And the commo comes in. He goes, hey, Mac, I want you to meet so-and-so. I'm like, hey, so-and-so, what's up? And then I do my normal, where are you from? Like, I'm from Toledo, Ohio. And everybody kind of looks because they know I have this standard routine. Toledo, Ohio, and I say it really friendly, like I've been there. I'm like, that's a fucking shithole. And the look on their face, and now when they hear me say, where are you from? All the Marines kind of turn a little bit because they want to see this because it's always funny. And then when I say, that's a fucking, and I say fucking like I just spit it out of my mouth. That's a fucking shithole. And they're like, Toledo? I said, yeah, I've been to Toledo. It's a shithole. No, it's not, sir. And then I'd look at anybody, like Schwarzby Center. I said, hey, Schwarz. I'd say, hey, XO, you ever been to Toledo? Yeah. Is it a shithole? It's a straight-up shithole. And then the person would always universally say, yeah, you're right, it is a shithole. And then we'd start laughing and say, oh, we're just fucking with you, man. None of us have been to Toledo. It is a shithole. And so that guy sits down and says, hey, I'm talking to your commo, and he's telling me, you know, some kind of interesting stuff. I said, what's that? He said that you never got uptight, and he has a great relationship with you. I said, oh, because I don't go in there and scream and stick my foot up his ass when he's fucked up? And he starts laughing. He goes, well, kind of. I said, well, look, you know, COM has issues too, right? The requirement for them to be perfect, that's probably a little bit unreasonable. Our responsibility to the Marines who are out fighting is to be able to do it. You know, whether we have digital comm or not. And so when that comm goes down, I always look at it as a training opportunity, you know, to show Marines that we can be just as good using a different means. And that's always at our disposal. So I never, you know, I never worry about it. Never get up his ass because I think other people are doing that. He doesn't need me to pile on. That's why he likes me so much. And the guy starts laughing. He goes, well, explain to me, what do you do? I said, well, see that staff sergeant over there? He's a Motor T guy. See those two Lance Corporals as the radio operators who are filling out yellow canaries that nobody reads anymore? When digital comm goes down, they're the two most important guys in the COC. And that staff sergeant who follows all the convoys in the region, who is awesome, by the way. I can't remember his name.
Was it like Moochek or something like that?
Yes. He's just a good dude. And so when I asked him, I said, hey, I want you to supervise this when this happens, and you're going to be the guy who's calling out radio comm to the COC. And he was so fired up. He was like, yes, sir, I'd love to do that. And I said, so that's what we do. And then we can manage the rest of it on push pins on those maps. We had a master gunnery sergeant who made push pins an art form. I don't know how he did it, but like the top of a push pin head, I don't know, he's like some ancient Asian way of like putting the RCT1 logo on there.
Yeah.
And you look at these goddamn pushpins, you're like, what? Like, first of all, I can't even read it. It's so small, but who the hell painted that? Oh, that's Master Guns. Well, he's an artsy guy for being that big, huh? And so the commo, Yeah, I never bitched at the combo, and he loved me. He'd come by, hey, Mac, how you doing? He's always nice to me. He's a weird dude, too. He's a weird dude. He's a weird dude, too.
The combo and the deuce were always, that was just a daily beating, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, that's expected, right? They're like the goofball. So you're in an infantry organization, and it's all grunts, right? And you got all these knuckle draggers rolling around doing their thing, and then you have these other guys. And can you imagine they're the comm guys, they could stay a night comm, like, oh, you're going to go to an infantry unit. Like, oh, shit, man. Those monkeys, I got to deal with them. And you can imagine just on a daily basis, you're always screwed up, and they're having none of it from you. Oh, it's funny. It's funny.
That and then the PAO was once a week just lashing, because that was never right.
The PAOs, come on. They're like the ministers of propaganda. Like, they didn't like – the worst interview you could ever do is in terms of meeting a guy is get the do you want to talk to the PAO? First of all, they don't really know anything. All they're doing is reading something that somebody gave them. And it's like, in fact, I did a little comedy routine on the PAOs, and it got back to them. They put McNamara All Marine Radio, and then with the Kathy Griffith head of Donald Trump thing. That's what they, I heard about it. Do you remember the well, I don't know if you remember, but there was a lieutenant, female type, that wrote an article, I want to say in probably 2012 or 13, entitled, Why Women Don't Belong in the Infantry. Her name is, she's a captain now, she's at OneMap, she's an intel person. Her name is Lauren Serrano. Her grandfather, interesting story, this is an aside, he was on the USS, shit. He was one of those destroyers in the Lady Gulf that when Nimitz got hoodwinked and started chasing Japanese carriers and that other and left the Philippines, four battleships, like, you know, three cruisers and seven destroyers came down to try to destroy the landing force. And this squadron of destroyers sees him and turns straight into him and says, let's go, boys, let's do this. Her dad was on one of those destroyers and was killed in that battle. And the book is called Last of the Tin Cans, the last great, you know, tin can something. I'll get the title of it, but somebody actually sent me the book. Ohio Man sent me the book after. He said it's an awesome read. And so, anyway, she tells me that she writes this article as she's PCSing from Okinawa to Camp Lejeune. And she, you know, 13-hour flight, whatever it is. So she writes it, and she mails it in the Gazette. She gets told it's going to be published, and, you know, okay. She said, look, it's nothing more than what my friends and I talk about. Okay. The next phone call she gets is from a friend, a fellow Marine officer, who says, hey, you're trending on Facebook. She says, what? He says, you're trending on Facebook. She says, for what? Why? What? She said, and he says, I guess your articles caused a firestorm. So, and it does. So, trying to do the whole women in combat thing, and here you have this lieutenant says, yeah, no. So, she gets invited to ask the president, President Obama, a question at this military forum. And so she accepts it, and they want her to ask a question about women in combat and give her, you know, kind of in the question, give her, you know, little, you know, very briefly, you know, her position. And so she sends the PAOs of the Marine Corps this stuff. And they say, well, you can ask about readiness relative to our operating forces. And what can be done about it? You can ask. And she said back, I'm asking him about women in combat. And they're like, yeah, we don't think that's going to happen. And so ultimately she does. She goes on and she does it. And then, you know, so she's been involved in these things again. And now she's just written an article about this move that, you know, changed the, you know, the women's PFT and all this. And she said, are you forcing, like, normal women out of the Marine Corps now with these standards? She says, do you know what it takes for a woman to get rocked up like that? That's not the way my body is. And I've had two kids now. So I'm terrified that I'm going to get booted out of the Marine Corps. And I think I'm a good officer. And so she wrote a very interesting article about, you know, now that a small fraction of the Marine Corps, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction want to be combat arms officers. The rest of us are all getting drugged. That's going to force some of us out. And so she's obviously a bright girl. So Lauren Serrano. Anyway, I offer that to you. You're supposed to make a comment, man.
I didn't get that.
Oh.
That I was supposed to make a comment.
All right. The here's another question. Mac, do you guys both think that Donald Trump will be reelected? You think Trump will be reelected?
I do. I'd bet on it now. I mean, there's still 3 years to get there, but people are starting to come around and watch what he does and not what he says.
You know, that's interesting because he could, in a very short period of time, he could screw a lot of stuff up.
Yeah.
He's like firing on a cyclic rate. And so 3 years is... 3 years is a long time. But when you look at what, if you step back and say, what has he done relative to Syria, Iraq? I don't know that it could have been done better than the way it got done, given what we had given away during the Obama administration. If you look at what's going on in Afghanistan right now, just in case nobody knows, we are laying the absolute wood to the Taliban in since the shutdown of combat operations, essentially against ISIS around Mosul and Raqqa. Since that is now gone, all those air sorties didn't go home. So the Taliban are watching right Mosul and going, "Oh my God, come on, boys, you guys got to hold out for a while, because it is raining JDAMs and precision-guided munitions in Afghanistan right now." And, I think the confrontation with Korea has to happen. You know, the confrontations, both economic and militarily, with China have to happen, and the same thing with Russia. So, and then the tax thing, and the next thing I just saw is that, you know, Kelly convened a group of congressmen and senators to talk about, you know, the Dreamer thing. That, hey, we've got to come to grips with, you know, the border, and we've got to do something for these young people that were born in the country and give them some kind of legal status. And if he does that, if he solves the Dreamer thing, you know, he'll be queen for a day.
Yeah.
So I agree, but again, I'm respectful of his ability to get in trouble, because he's
any day.
He's gifted when it comes to getting in trouble. He's gifted. The another email, Mac. The interview with Mr. Kingsbury had me sitting here shaking my head, especially when he got to the part about other people have it worse than I do. He said that there was the Marine who he knew, whose parents got to see him just before he passed away after he had been blown up. And he said that he had lived a good life and that he was extremely proud of his nation. I'm not sure how you get that son of a bitch to go viral, but people need to hear that. A guy with Agent Orange talking like that is pretty amazing. God bless him. I hope he does well, and thanks for sharing that with us. I don't really like that term, sharing with a group. I don't know, give me like the heebie-jeebies, I don't like it, but no, I was listening to it going, shit, you know, this is not.
When was that interview from?
I did it yesterday afternoon.
Oh.
Yeah, he and I talked, we conversed, and I didn't know he was having the health issues that he had, and I had no idea that there was a second Korean War in the 60s. that, you know, I want to say close to 400 South Korean soldiers were killed. I want to say close to 60 American soldiers were killed. And it was just this back and forth at the DMZ, infiltration, ambush, all that kind of nonsense. And I was like, what? Well, let me look that up. And
yeah, how do you miss that?
Yeah, and then lo and behold, 1966, they sprayed Agent Orange, which is what they were doing in Vietnam at the time, because they, you know, they're infiltrating. Oh, we got a solution to that. We'll make all the vegetation go away. And so, but I mean, yeah, his attitude is. It is amazing. In fact, the story is he's categorized as 4F for some physical stuff. And his friend's mom is the head of the draft board where he grew up in North Dakota. And so he goes to see her and says, is there a chance, am I going to get reevaluated? Because I'm a pretty healthy guy. And she says, well, yeah, probably in the next year you will be, but not before then. She said, but, you know, you could always go down and enlist and see what they say. He said, okay. At the recruiting office, what do you think he was categorized as?
Oh, he was probably good to go.
1A. 1A, baby. Yeah. 1A, baby. Here you go. Thanks for joining the United States Army. No, it's very cool. But, yeah, don't say sharing with a group. I don't know why I don't like that. It makes me think I'm in some kind of therapeutic event, even though I actually am. But I guess that puts me in denial. Next question. Mac, if I'm not mistaken, Montana Man, is he the horseshoe guy? Montana Man, are you the horseshoe
guy? Same guy.
Okay. And then if he is, could you ask him to explain that? Yeah, explain horseshoeing. Can you just pound nails into their hoofs and don't they feel it? Or is that like their fingernail? They have no feeling in it.
Well, to a point. They're sensitive and insensitive structures in the foot. And the key is to keep it in the insensitive structure. You can quick a horse, you're going to know it pretty fast if you do, because they're going to kick the shit out of you. But usually you get a nail up coming out of the foot about, an inch to an inch and a quarter from the ground, a third of the way up the hoof wall.
Okay, so is the hoof a fingernail?
It is. It's the same.
Same concept.
Same concept.
Okay, so just like on my dog, when I never do it, but you can see in their fingernail an area that becomes kind of clear, which I would assume it would have a nerve ending in that, and that's live. Is a horse the same way? There's an area that's dead. I don't know if dead's the right word, but
they grow from the coronet band, which is the end of the fur on the leg, grows foot from there down, just like your fingernail from the cuticle grows out. And at a point down the foot, it gets to be insensitive, and that's what you're aiming for when you're putting nails in.
So do most horses why do you shoe a horse?
The short answer is because we ask horses to go places they wouldn't go on their own and do things they wouldn't do in the wild. You know, a horse is not going to, you know, go walking down a road with gravel if there's, you know, soft dirt on the side of the road, but whoever's sitting on his back wants to go down the road, so we force those animals to do that. The only reason you put a shoe on a horse is for protection or correction. Am I going to change the angle of the foot in whether it's dorsal palmar or medial lateral angle due to a bone issue, joint problem, arthritis, laminitis, which is basically the part of the foot that holds the hoof wall to the bone. Ooh. Starts to separate. Kind of be like grabbing the end of your fingernail and peeling it back and then walking on it. So correction and protection is the reason to do it. Like this time of year around here, everybody's barefoot. Not many are getting used, so there's no putting steel on feet right now.
Okay, so the wild horses that we see obviously aren't shoed, and they just and so the hoof works for them because they simply don't go places that would cause them some kind of discomfort through their hoof.
Correct. And over time, I mean, it's in a wild horse, if you can get a crossbred Mustang horse, you're going to have a horse with good feet because it's, you know, natural selection's real for them. The horses that we've domesticated, it's not. You know, if you've got shitty feet and you're a domestic horse, well, the horseshoer comes and tries to do the best he can to make you work. Whereas in the wild, they're just mountain lion bait at that point. So they have amazing feet, those wild horses, and that's just hundreds of years of natural selection. Feet and teeth are the two things you need to have a horse.
What's the trickiest part about shoeing?
The trickiest part is time.
What do you mean time?
It takes me on average, when I make my schedule, I schedule an hour and a half for a full set of shoes. I usually get it done if the horse is cooperative in an hour and 15. But being able to do all the things that need to be done correctly in a short period of time is the hardest part. I mean, if I've got all day to shoe a horse, I can do it perfect. But if I want to make any money, I got to shoe at least, you know, 5 horses a day. So there's, you know, 6 hours, right there if I'm on my game. But shaping the shoe, getting it correct to the foot, proper trim on the horse, the whole nail up and finish process, the process you put in place, kind of like that medevac deal, you've got to hone it so every movement counts, or else you're going to be really tired and not have a lot of horses shod, and your checkbook's going to be light.
Do you think of yourself as a horse manicurist or pedicurist? You ever think of yourself in that way?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But there is a movement out there. What the hell are they calling themselves? Equine podiatrists. Is what the freaking tree hugging barefoot groups are starting to go to.
Sounds to me more like a horse pedicure.
Well,
would you like to get your horse a pedicure? That's me. See, that to me sounds you could market the hell out of that. Shoe your horse. That sounds pretty draconian, right? Get your horse a pedicure.
Well, that's why the people are starting to call them equine podiatrists.
Oh my God, that's awesome! That's awesome.
It's freaking great.
What? So you're in Idaho, yes?
Yeah, I got. I never made it home last night, but I am in Idaho.
What happened?
I stopped at my buddy's.
Here we go.
And Alicia's not with me, so I didn't have anywhere I had to be.
Right.
And we started. I was dropping a trailer for him to fill
because
he's moving to Montana, and then I was going to take it back for him, and that turned into, well, why don't we just fill it now? Well, I got to go to town and get this, and okay, well, I'll go with you. And then we come back and load the trailer. Then we start screwing with the rest of his crap, organizing that. That took about 6 beers, and then there was dinner, and then I was like, I'm not driving home.
Did you slide 6 beers in there? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that was about 6 beers. That was before dinner.
What kind of beer what kind of beer do you drink? Are you one of those foo-foo beer guys?
No, Coors Light, General.
Nice, I love that.
Yeah. God, when we had the place in Ramona, we had Fast Ale was always my favorite beer, but I only really liked it on tap. So the only possible solution was to keep a keg of Fast Ale out in the tack room. But you can drink about 1 or 2 of those beers and then you feel like you ate a pork chop, you know? So I went to the lighter beer.
I love when you go to I'm not much of a drinker, but I will drink when I go to, like, if somebody says, hey, let's meet at this place. Like, hey, they have, like, 9,600 different beers here. What do you want? Coors Light? What?
Exactly.
No, Mac. La, 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 la. Yeah, no, I heard you. I'll have a Coors Light.
They're like, what is wrong with you? Like, look, I don't want clovers tinged with orange.
Yeah, right? I don't need any fruit. I don't need any vegetables. I don't need any freaking oats. I don't need any of that shit in my beer. Have you, you've been to Annapolis?
I have.
Did you ever go to the Ram's Head Tavern downtown?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's like in a basement, but they got, they're one of those places that, I mean, the whole entire wall is covered with taps.
Yeah. And then they're like, Mac? Coors Light? And now I love doing it. Cause just to see the head snap. I'll have Guinness, blah, 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 blah. Like, don't give me that Guinness bullshit, okay? Warm beer, come on, that's barbaric. Like, I'm Irish. I don't, like, those idiots, they invented that? Okay, let them have it. Just leave them alone. Maybe they'll go away. The warm beer. Oh, it's the best. It's so, like, shut up with that. It's like your uncle's blood sausage. I guarantee, if you cook that shit in your home, you'll have to get it fumigated, okay? Don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, no, my grandpa, his blood. Oh, you shut up and get that stuff. Take it down to some kind of hazmat place and throw it away because that stuff is nasty. Yeah, and you, same thing with beer. Just go away with you and your foo-foo beer bullshit. All right. That's your what are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow I'm heading back, hopefully, if the weather's good enough. We got the trailer loaded. I got it here at the house.
That's right. So is tomorrow the day that we might meet Alicia or what?
No, it's Friday.
Friday. Well, if you're driving back tomorrow, would you be with us tomorrow?
I told you that was a question.
Yeah. You were with us yesterday and you were driving. Why would you be with tomorrow if you were driving?
Well, all the no comm zone is on this side. So basically I was able to hit the comm zone on the way here.
Got it.
At the right time. Going back, probably not.
Okay. All right. Noted. All right, bud. I appreciate the visit today. And have a good drive tomorrow.
All right, man. We'll catch up.
There you have it. That is Robert Schwartz, also known as Montana Man. Yeah. When was the last time you had a horseshoe lesson? Okay, but trust me. All right. He's now a horse pedicurist. He is not a furrier. I'm a furrier. Yeah, maybe not, okay? You do horse manicures. That's what you do, alright? So on that note, if you're just joining us, don't touch that dial. You're gonna hear about, Kyle Carpenter, Medal of Honor recipient. He graduated from the University of South Carolina over the weekend, and so we have a little this. You'll hear about him and how his life was saved, and then you'll hear an interview with a gentleman by the name of Ralph Kingsbury, and Ralph served and fought in Korea in the '60s during the DMZ battles between 1966 and 1969, and has Agent Orange. One of the most inspirational interviews ever done in my life. So I would tell you, by all means, don't touch your dial and listen to that because when you hear somebody who has Agent Orange, whose body's being destroyed by Agent Orange, say, yeah, other people have it worse than me, It's I don't know why it had such an impact on me because you don't hear that stuff very often anymore. So you'll hear him and then you'll hear, Montana Man, obviously. So with that said, with Bing Crosby in the background, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. Have a great Wednesday. Christmas not too far away. All Marine Radio over and out.